Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. The running joke about the 2024 rat beef is that the real winner isn't Kendrick Lamar, isn't J. Cole, isn't Drake. Well, it definitely isn't Drake, but it's Universal Music Group. And there's some truth to that, but each of these artists has artist-friendly licensing deals. Drake has had one with Republic Records for years, once he ended his deal with Cash Money. Kendrick Lamar ended his deal with TDE. He has a licensing agreement with Interscope. J. Cole ended his with Roc Nation Records. He has one with Interscope as well. These artists who have the leverage and have the opportunity to create an account on any distributor, they're continuing to work with the major record labels. And it's a fascinating opportunity to talk about this in this world where the major record labels are doing several things to try to become more like distributors. They want to improve their stack. They're trying to acquire several of these companies. But we also see on the other side that the distributors are doing many things that record labels do and adding on more label services. They're offering bigger advances. They're trying to offer more support with marketing and radio and other options. And to break it all down, I'm joined by AudioMac co-founder Brian Z. Zizuk. He's a wealth of knowledge on this topic. He's been on this podcast before, and he's the perfect person to break it all down with. So let's dive in. We're here to talk about licensing deals with Z from AudioMac. Welcome back to the pod.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you for having me. It's so exciting to talk about licensing agreements. I'm glad there's an audience for this.
Not the sexiest topic in the world, but it's a topic that came into discussion recently with all of the diss tracks that we saw over the past couple of months. J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar, and other artists, if you read the fine print, they have licensing deals with the major record labels. They are no longer under the initial deals that they were under, but they continue to work with these companies. So it was interesting to see how the business dynamics for these artists shifted, especially as they enter this next stage in their career.
Yeah, it's certainly prevalent amongst your established A-list household name acts, but there have been a tremendous wealth of, we'll call, developmental and emerging artists who have done these sorts of deals, not just with major labels, but with larger independents that consider themselves to be the major equivalent in the indie space. There's two types of licensing agreements that we'll look at. One is a distribution deal, and then the other is a label services deal. So distribution. You are licensing your music for a set term to the distributor, who will then have the responsibility to distribute your music to all DSPs and stores. That's it. On the label services side, it's a distribution deal plus. They are going to provide for you services in areas that you need assistance that you are not well versed enough in, such as radio promotion, digital marketing, publicity, and playlist pitching. Now, for a distribution deal, right, you are licensing your music to the distributor for a set term. Some, it's as low as 3 months or 6 months, could be a year, 2 years. It all depends. Everything is negotiable. On a label services deal, there is typically an advance offer. And if there's an advance offer, the label or distributor providing those services is going to need a longer runway to recoup it. And so the term there might be 5 years or 10 years, depending on that upfront amount.
Correct. And for these artists, especially some of these more established stars that were part of this big rap beef that we had, but even other artists too. You look at Taylor Swift and the deal that she has with Republic. It was one of the more favorable licensing deals that a record label has with a particular artist. I've heard it's anywhere around the range of 80-20 or 85-15 in favor of Taylor Swift. At the time, there were other record label executives that were quite critical of the deal, but there's a few things to keep in mind there. On the major record label side, it gives them an opportunity to still claim Taylor Swift's 2.5 million units sold in that first week towards their market share. And that is what many of these major record labels are after. It also allows them to have Taylor Swift as marketing as well. You read the headlines, Taylor Swift's record label resolved its conflict with TikTok. That's how this gets pushed. And you're able to have her and use her as a channel to attract more artists. So even though you're in this era where this is what a top level superstar deal can look like, it's very different from the way that it was back in the day. The superstar deal back in the CD era was closer to a 32 or 33% deal. If you look at some of those legacy rock bands, that's what they had. But again, this was an era where there wasn't a DistroKid and TuneCore. There weren't options for people to have this. And even though someone like Taylor Swift likely isn't going to work directly with a distribution service in that type of way, those options still give her and others enough leverage to be able to command much higher. So that's how a 32% deal, which looked quite favorable back in the CD era, can now become something that is much higher for an artist at that level.
There's a lot of benefits for the labels to offer these agreements. So first off, there's so much competition. Historically, there were only a few different labels that you could work with to mass distribute your product. And remember, back in the day, distribution wasn't digital. Distribution was pressing up physical products and then mailing them out everywhere, right? So there was an inherent cost involved. On the indie distributor side, they would take maybe a quarter, right? So you would maintain master ownership, but they would take a fourth of your profits for the cost inherent in that whole process. Now, like, a button is being pressed and in seconds, the music is available everywhere for stream. So from the label's perspective, they had no choice. The marketplace dictated that the competition was so fierce, there was so much optionality, that to not begin to offer these more equitable deals that allows the creative to maintain ownership was a non-starter. I want to give a shout out to Empire, who was one of the first outside of the major label system to really hone in on this type of agreement. What they saw was a segment of the artist ecosystem wherein they had been in a major label deal, and either they completed the deal, meaning they turned in their 3 to 5 albums, they did or didn't recoup, and either they were dropped or they chose not to renew. So this caliber of artist was really used to having the resources and the infrastructure of a label, but the idea of ever going back to a deal type that would require them to turn over that much ownership would simply be a non-starter. And so that gave Empire and other labels the opportunity to step in and say, we're going to give you all the same services that you had before. So when you need someone, there will be someone available to answer your questions, to pick up the phone, to respond to your emails, to pitch your music. But on the agreement side, you're just giving us the right to exploit your music for a set term. Here's some upfront money to get you started. And when the term ends, if you are recouped, you will retain 100% ownership of your work. And so, like, the market economics really dictated that this was necessary. In the short term, to your point, it improves major label market share, which is how all the fat cats and the executives get paid out their insane bonuses at the end of every year. Beyond that, though, the major label system historically has done one thing incredibly, which is tell the world, we can turn you into a star. And it really hurts if the stars that they create walk out the door. It makes that sales pitch a lot more difficult. And so what they have done is when artists who are stars and became them through the first agreement in these systems, when their contracts are up, like a Kendrick or a Cole or a Drake, they have the unique ability to say, we're going to offer you a licensing agreement. And so that you don't leave and take some other licensing agreement, we can rework the terms of your original deal and give you a more favorable royalty split. So that way, as your new material generates traction for your back catalog, you'll be able to not only reap the short-term benefits of this new licensing agreement, but you will also be able to make more money on your catalog because the term split will be more favorable.
And we've continued to see more of these deals happen with artists at that level. We've also seen it for newer and younger artists too. The terms may not be at the same level as Drake or Kendrick or J. Cole, but if you're an artist that is rising, you're making money, and you have the optionality where you're not relying on this deal to survive, you've been able to make a living off of your music, then you also have considerable leverage. And that's a thing that is changed, especially in this current era where artists can build up their base and build up their community, their following, their audience, and they have leverage when they go to the table too.
Yeah, and this is not exclusive to the major label. There are major label owned distributors such as InGrooves / Virgin, Orchard and AWOL that are under Sony. The benefit to working with some of these companies is upstream opportunity. If something that you release starts to take off, you would potentially be upstreamed to one of the labels in that system. They're looking at the data. They see it's performing really well. And so they would reach out to you.
The other thing too that we see with the majors and the distributors is that there's a lot more blending where they are trying to do the thing that the other is doing. And we've seen that happen. You alluded to several of the major record labels that have either acquired or partnered with several of the distribution companies. We also saw Warner Music make an attempt to acquire Believe, and Believe owns TuneCore, and TuneCore is one of the more popular distributors out there. But then on the distributor side, we've seen them have more label services that do try to compete directly with the major record labels as well. We're seeing them offer more advances where many of them have raised hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to have advances. Can those advances compare to the level of advances that someone like Drake may get in the quote-unquote LeBron size deal? That deal was reported. Maybe not quite to that same level, but those things continue to get closer. And we did see this play out semi-publicly with Brent Faiyaz, where he was deciding between doing a partnership with Interscope or doing a partnership with United Masters, and he ended up working directly with United Masters. And it'll be interesting to see how that continues to develop as the two of them clearly see each other as competitors to some extent, because the lines are just starting to blur and blur more.
Yeah, and shout out to Brent and his manager, Ty. Like, every label in the entire world wanted to sign him. I think what it comes down to is if you have seen tremendous success operating in a very particular way, and in Brent's case, that particular way was you choose when you release music, complete autonomy, creative control from soup to nuts, album art, song titles, visuals, marketing elements, the idea of entering a system like Interscope, where you now have to get a clearance for a release date, and all these assets need to be run through multiple divisions and departments, and there are far more clearances that are required. Because you can't just choose on a Tuesday morning, I want to release something on Wednesday and it's out. That is unless you're Drake. He will typically email the label on a Thursday evening at 6 o'clock and say, we're going live tonight. Do whatever you need to do because it's coming. Very few artists have that leverage.
This is a point that I think comes up often because people will look at the decision that certain artists make and try to make generalizations. I've often heard the question, oh, if you're Drake, if you're Kendrick, you're Cole, why would you continue to work with the major? The thing is that they aren't going to go back down to a level where they have to either A, do all this stuff themselves, or hire all of the support that they have to figure out. Look at Beyonce. She has her whole Parkwood Entertainment team, and she has signed artists to that label. But when Beyonce is releasing Cowboy Carter, when Beyonce is releasing Renaissance, she still has a relationship with Columbia. She's had a relationship with Columbia for over 30 years now. So if you think about how this industry works, one, there's a big relationship piece of it. But two, as much as people do have issues with record labels, this is still a place where if you are trying to be the biggest artist in the world, you're trying to reach all of these touch points, you want to make sure that your music rings out in every corner, you want to have the best teams in the world working on the stuff, that is what the record labels are built to do. That said, these other companies, the distributors and others, are building up their teams as well. So that's where a lot of this does become quite gray. There's no right or wrong answer, but that is one of the reasons why you'll see the Drakes and Kendra continue to work with these labels, as opposed to either going to a indie distributor and doing a label services deal or some other similar hybrid. Let's take a break for our chart metric stat of the week. The Weeknd is one of the artists we've been talking about in this episode who has a much more favorable deal with the majors than most artists do. Well, as of May 26th, he's the number one artist in the world for both radio spins and Spotify monthly listeners. He's the number three most Shazammed artist, and he's the number 11th artist on YouTube for the most monthly video views. If you're wondering why artists like these get much more favorable terms, this is why, and he's continued to stay at the top of these lists. Let's get back to the episode.
There's two things to keep in mind. Kendrick Lamar and his team have worked with inside of the Interscope and UMG system for the last 15 years, right? These are people who understand his backstory. They understand his catalog. They understand how to work with him, how to communicate with him. It takes a long time, like any relationship, whether you're in music or otherwise, to build up a rapport and a level of trust. No one wants to work to that point and then start from scratch, meeting all brand new people that you're now entrusting to do this work on your behalf. So it distracts from the ability to just solely focus on the music making if you don't have the right people in place to handle all of those responsibilities. So relationships play a huge role. The second is these artists are financial centers, right? It costs a lot of money to be in the Drake business. It costs a lot of money to be in the Kendrick Lamar business. And labels do more than just front money for marketing and recording budgets. They also order merch and they also help the artists front a tour. Having access to that capital is a great resource when you've already gotten to that stage of your career, something that I would even say is necessary.
Especially when you're at that stage of the career, you need certain guardrails up. You look at all of these superstar artists, it's not a coincidence that once you reach a certain level, someone may start trying to sue you because, oh, this sample sounds too much like this. If you're just uploading your music directly to a distribution service, yeah, sure, you may have your own lawyer, but it's a lot more difficult to deal with that if you don't have a team that is experienced in doing those types of things.
Yeah, that's a great point. And there's 70 small little tasks that are carried out every day by hundreds of people within label systems, whether that be sending DMCA notices to UGC platforms, putting in claims for derivative uploads, clearing samples, communicating with rights holders, liaising with music supervisors. There's so much that goes into getting to that level of success that, to reiterate, the idea that you could go from having all of those resources at your disposal in a system that like does this thing well and then have to carry all that responsibility independent of that system that you've leaned on for a long time, that's got to be a daunting thought. And that's why we don't see that happen too often.
We've talked a lot about these established stars. Who are some other artists that maybe newer in their career that have gotten these types of deals?
One artist that I'd love to hit on is Teddy Swims. He began his career uploading covers to his YouTube of The Weeknd and Bruno Mars and Shania Twain. And they took off like gangbusters. And he was able to pivot that into a licensing deal with Warner Records. Over the last year or so, Warner Records has done really well. But for a period of time, their market share was very low. And so to attract more talent, I think they realized very early on, like, we need to offer this deal type. And we've seen that across the board. Armani White signed to Def Jam last year, and they have, over the last few years, as Tunji has built up their roster, offered a lot of licensing agreements. Again, in much the same position, lower market share. So to incentivize artists to believe in what they're building, that's a attractive deal type that perhaps is more competitive as compared to what other offers were out there for the artists.
One person that we should talk about is Kanye West. because he's probably one of the unique exceptions of an artist that has been the most commercially successful artist at Def Jam. But given everything that we've seen from him about the anti-Semitism and the hate speech, we saw how that affected his business partnerships with Adidas and Gap. And we also saw what that looked like when it was time for him to shop this album that he put out in collaboration with Ty Dolla $ign. I know there are several distributors that were going back and forth about, do we want to partner with Kanye? And he ended up finding an option out there. But it just goes to show again that there are options out there for better or worse, because the system is so fragmented. And even someone like Kanye, love him or hate him, had an album that topped the Billboard charts as an independent artist.
Yeah. Is that the path that he took? Yes. Is part of the reason that he took that path because he had more limited options? Yes. And did it work for him? Undeniably. The fact that he was able to have a number one as an independent artist who effectively signed a distribution deal with Create Music Group, good on him. I would imagine that any of the artists that you and I have discussed on this pod, whether that be Drake or Taylor Swift or Kendrick Lamar, if any of them were to have pursued the exact same path, they too, just based on their catalog and their namesake and their history, also would have been able to tap the chart. Some artists, it's a foregone conclusion. It doesn't really matter who, what supply chain or delivery partner you're using. Your name and the music alone is going to do the rest. Everybody that I've talked to over the past few months continually brings up Kanye's name as an example of what they think is possible for more artists of his stature and ilk moving forward. But you have to remember, he became a pariah. He initially tried to work with several other labels, and for one reason or another, they came to the conclusion that they did not want to be in the Kanye West business, even if that only meant pressing a button and sending his music out to DSP. Just the association was enough to repel them. He finally found a company that felt comfortable enough being that partner. And there's always going to be one. There's always going to be more than one, probably. If it wasn't Create, he would have found someone else. He tried to. He tried to do it directly through Fuga, and that didn't work. Or I guess it worked, and then it didn't work because they weren't on the same page either. Needless to say, I don't know if using him as the litmus test on a move forward basis is the most accurate way to assess the viability of that path.
Yeah, if he was being honest, he would probably rather one of the deals that the Drakes and Kendrick Lamars and J. Cole's and Taylor Swift have. And I know that he made his comments about Lucian Grange being Drake's baby daddy, but Kanye probably wishes that he was in that position, and he's not. We've heard him speak about the jealousy that he has about Drake's career and how things have went over time. This point more so just highlights there are many options out there.
Yeah, just based on his public comments, I want to make clear, none of what I'm about to say is based on Kanye and I speaking, but based strictly on his public comments and in interviews and tweets that he had put up when he was active on that platform, I don't fully believe that he understood how his original or reworked contract actually was supposed to play out. He, like so many artists, made various public comments about how he never saw a check from the label. And the reason is because he kept getting advances and taking out huge recording budgets. And so the label just kept fronting him the money, which effectively just put him in greater and greater debt with the label. So that money was either spent on the album or not, but regardless, still has to be paid back. And so upon his exit from the UMG system, he was unrecouped at that time. And so I'm sure that had he not gotten himself into public trouble, they would have gladly just dug that well deeper and given him even more money that, again, he would have had to pay back. This represented a clean slate for him, though, because he financed the recording of this project on his own, independent of any label. And so he just gets to reap the financial benefits. The difference, of course, is as people consumed his new music, they also consumed his back catalog. And the back catalog consumption went toward his recoupment with his former label partner at UMG.
Kanye, I think, signed a record label deal 20 years ago. We all saw the Genius documentary. Did we get the impression that this was someone that was like, oh, wait, let me read the fine lines before I finally get my chance here? No, you're going to take that chance. And yes, there's a lot of artists that probably should have read more of the fine lines. We're in a completely different era. And especially when you look at these blog era rappers that came up later than Kanye West did, there was more information then, and we start to see how they carry themselves a little bit differently. Even outside of hip hop, you start to see how, whether it's a Taylor Swift or an Olivia Rodrigo or even a Billie Eilish and artists like that, you start to see what this looks like over time. We'll see artists like Russ too, who may have some time working directly with a major record label to have a certain type of deal set up, but then he goes back on TuneCore. So it all speaks to the flexibility of where we are right now in the game.
And that's what I'm most excited about, is we're in an era now where the independent landscape has dynamically shifted in a way that historically was never possible. The only thing that could help it even more is if some of these artists who've been fortunate enough to renew deals with these new terms, if they too talked about it publicly. I think there would be a lot of goodwill that could be done if a Kendrick Lamar or a J. Cole, someone that a lot of the youths look up to, were to either themselves through like a Players Tribune style op-ed or on social media or in an interview, were to talk about it openly. It would create great dialogue. And I think it would go a long way toward ensuring that the next generation of creatives like them never, ever again signed a bad deal of any kind.
I couldn't agree more. I want you to share a little bit more about some of the things coming underway at AudioMac to help with this education, to help with people better understanding this.
Well, thank you, Dan. And for the last few years, I have been inundated with DMs and emails for non-legal contract review or advice or recommendations on how to navigate their own situations. And so we've been slowly developing an artist services division to offer those who use AudioMac the opportunity to have a referral with some of our licensed partners, where we can assess where you're at in your career, what type of music you make, where you're based, and who might be the best partner for you. If you're using a DistroKid or a TuneCore, but you want services, where do you go? Where do you even start? We work with all these companies. We know what each of them is good at, perhaps what they're not so good at, and hopefully be able to provide those who use AudioMac with a push in the right direction and help elevate their career to the next level.
Z, appreciate you, man. This is great. And hopefully the next time something pops off, you can elevate the conversation next time on Twitter and not need to repeat yourself over and over. So thank you for sharing that with the many people that have an increased interest in the music business.
I'm a masochist. What can I say? Dan, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's always a pleasure to chop it up with you. I appreciate it.
Likewise. Thanks, man. If you enjoy this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time. This episode of Trapital is brought to you by Symphony OS, the marketing platform for today's creative businesses. Gaining traction is one of the hardest things for a creator or artist to do. How do you break through all the noise? Well, it's a little easier when you work with the AI-powered marketing tools recently used by James Blake, Tinashe, Coi Leray, Cash Cobain, and others to grow their audiences. That's Symphony OS. It's built to empower today's online businesses with the tech they need to grow. Think Canva for marketing. It's the operating system that has been tested for superstars and tailored for the next generation of indie artists and creators. With Symphony, you can run automated marketing campaigns on your Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, centralize your fan CRM with customizable data collection tools, and track fan-base analytics and insights. Symphony OS is used by teams at United Masters, Rage Media, Roc Nation, Interscope, The Orchard, and more. Trusted by over 50,000 artists worldwide. Take your career to the next level and try Symphony OS for free. You can click the link in our show notes, or you can visit symphony.to/trapital. That's symphony.to/trapital.